B-Pod Studios.
Listen, listen, watch, watch, react in real time. Toucher and Richer on twitch.tv. Just follow the Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
RJ Hunter steps to his left. Here's that quick three, and he banks it in.
Ooh.
And the Celtics bench explodes. Timeout, Scott Brooks.
Ooh. Take that one off the window.
RJ Hunter.
Let me change my mind about who I'd like to talk to.
RJ Hunter has 10 points in this sequence in which the Celtics have gone now on a 22-5 run.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Listen, listen, watch, watch, react in real time. Toucher and Richer on twitch.tv. Just follow the Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
RJ Hunter steps to his left. Here's that quick three, and he banks it in.
Ooh.
And the Celtics bench explodes. Timeout, Scott Brooks.
Ooh. Take that one off the window.
RJ Hunter.
Let me change my mind about who I'd like to talk to.
RJ Hunter has 10 points in this sequence in which the Celtics have gone now on a 22-5 run.
Danny Ainge going to be a little closer to 905.
There were so many Who Are They's playing last night. I thought Michael Sweetney was going to check in at any moment.
Oh, that guy was great. He was about 340 pounds.
I don't think I've seen the biggest
Celtic I've ever seen in my entire life.
Who's bigger?
Thomas Hamilton. You can look him up. Mid-90s when they were really bad. Hamilton was about 360,
okay.
370.
They have Sweetney listed at 295
That's
pounds.
That's not right. That's about not 50 pounds short.
Did you ever see him when he played for the Celtics, Fred?
No.
It was just, I thought that someone had won like a chance to play on the same court during the summer league. I mean, he was just a big
what
guy.
What do you think Shaquille O'Neal weighed when he was here?
Shaq was probably 330.
Oh, no way.
No,
we saw he was fat. Bet you he weighed as close to 400 as you can.
Oh, man.
He was not only tall, but he was fat at that point.
He's listed at 324 right now.
Shaquille O'Neal?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, just if you like Google him, it says 324 pounds.
And Edelman's 5'11".
Thomas Hamilton was listed at 7'2", 330. Listed at 7'2", 330. I guarantee you he was 365 or 370 when he got to the Celtics in the mid-90s. He was fantastic.
I'm going to say that Shaquille O'Neal was well north of 350.
350, man.
He's 7 foot a million.
I know. He's a monster. He's huge. Standing next to him, it's like you can't believe a human being can be made this big.
My son started sobbing the minute that he saw him.
When you guys went and talked to him in Framingham that time.
That's right. He's as close to like a giant as I've ever met in my life.
He's the largest human being I've ever met. He's bigger than the Big Show.
Ooh, was he bigger than the Big Show?
Because the Big Show wasn't fat. Like
I think he was bigger than the Big Show. Yeah, he might have been. Because the Big Show, when he walks in, you're like, oh, my God.
But not like Shaquille O'Neal. He was big and fat.
Well, think of it this way. Sweetney weighed almost as much as him, and I think that Shaquille had 7 inches on.
All right. No, there's no doubt that aesthetically, the man you're pointing out
Michael
to me
Sweetney, yes.
Is more of a specimen. But,
and everyone loved him. Apparently, he was like a great guy, and everyone wanted to, you know, see him succeed. But I just remember seeing that during the summer league and going, how is this happening?
Well, he kept bacon in his shorts, so everyone got excited. Celtics fans of all ages are invited to tune into Passing the Torch, an original special in which Celtics legends and current players engage in a series of candid and illuminating conversations about their lives on and off the court. The featured discussions are between Danny Ainge and Marcus Smart, Satch Sanders and Jaylen Brown and Bob Cousy and Kyrie Irving. It's a lot of ands. Passing the Torch debuts on NBC Sports Boston and Celtics digital channels this Thursday night at 8:30. Danny Ainge is the president of basketball operations for the Boston Celtics, and he joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Hello, Mr. Danny Ainge.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
Fantastic. We're just reliving some of the heavier players to play in the Celtics.
Is Shaq the biggest? Like, how much did he weigh when you signed him back in, what was that, 10? Was that 2010?
Yeah. Obviously Shaq was a very big man. I don't know who was the biggest, but he was 3-something. Yeah, and those guys were big boys.
Yeah, he was huge. He was, I mean, we were talking about Michael Sweetney, who seemed like everyone seemed to like the guy, but I mean, he's got to be the biggest dude that's been out there, like, as of late, correct?
Well, I mean, Michael was overweight, but, you know, he was only 6'8 or 6'9. He wasn't like a 7'1 guy like Shaq. I mean, those guys, Shaq was enormous. Or Tree Rollins, who was, you know, 7'2, I think. So,
your personal,
you know,
buddy.
There's a lot. Yeah. And I think, you know, but Michael Sweetney was a big boy, no doubt. Oliver Miller was a big man, too. I played with Oliver in Phoenix.
All right, Danny, so settle it for us. Who had a better career, Paul Pierce or Dwayne Wade?
Well, I'm going to say Paul because I just went into my analytics group the other day and I asked them that question because it just seems a lot of the players feel like Wade was better and so forth, but that wasn't my take. But it looked like – so we have an analytic called – an analysis called adjusted plus minus. Okay, that's probably the best way you can actually, the best number you can come up with a player's impact in the game. And both Paul and Dwayne Wade, by the way, had unbelievable careers, but as we know, but they were very high in the prime of their career on adjusted plus minus, meaning they were, you know, in the 10, 11 range per 100 possessions, which is enormous. And only the superstars get up there. But Paul, Dwayne Wade was slightly better in his 20s than Paul Pierce. So Dwayne Wade was like a plus 6.4 from 22 to 29, and Paul Pierce was plus 5.4. So it was very close. Both of those are very good. And then in the 30s, Pierce was actually better than he was in his 20s. Pierce was plus 5.8, and Dwayne Wade was minus 0.4. So I'm just going to – and that was my initial feeling, is that Pierce was a little more consistent for longer than Dwayne.
Do you ever just want to wedgie those pencil neck geeks in the analytics department?
Yeah, I mean, that's just an easier way. That's an easier way to describe it. And you know, it sort of came to the, you know, I think everybody came to the conclusion, therefore, that, you know, they would have to give the nod to Pierce in our staff.
I just love the fact that you got so into that discussion that you gathered a group of people to do research on this. Did you say?
Yeah, so I actually, you know, asked my players. I was curious because, listen, there was a time where I thought Wade was, you know, he was as special as there was in the game at one moment. And, I mean, that's the one argument for Dwayne, was he was a first-time NBA player 2 or 3 times, and, you know, Paul was never on the first-team All-NBA ballot. But I think that, you know, Paul, just over the course of his career, was more consistent.
Oh, wow. I mean, did you send those stats to Paul Pierce? Because ever since then, he has been getting a world of crap from basically everybody.
Yeah, no, I think that's what amazed me was I saw one poll that had taken, and it was like 80%, 20% in favor of Wade by the poll. But, you know, again, it depends on the demographics and the age of the people that are doing that. But, you know, we had mixed feelings on the players on our team, and it was mixed. I think some of the guys thought Wade, some of the guys, wow, too close to call. But, yeah, it was close, whoever had an answer, but it was mixed.
All right. Did you, by any chance, get to watch the entire 44-minute press conference with Magic Johnson yesterday?
No, I did not.
It's very enlightening.
Yeah, I did not take the time to do that.
What's your opinion of what happened yesterday evening?
I don't know what happened. I know that this work is a grind, and if you don't really enjoy the people you're working with and the work you're doing, then you shouldn't be doing it. I respect Magic's decision. I don't really understand the dynamic of how he did it, and by not telling Jeannie, that seemed a little bit interesting. But I like Magic, and he's a good guy. But it sounds like to me he just wants to go back and have the life he had before he had this job.
Have you reached out to him since then? As a fellow,
no,
you have not. Okay, are you going to?
I have not. No, probably not. No.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good.
Do you guys not get along?
No, I mean, I don't really have that kind of a relationship with Magic. I mean, I respect his decision. I like him as a person. You know, when we see each other at different events, you know, we always say hi and all that. But you know, it's not like we're friends. But I have a great deal of respect for Magic.
Was it tough for you to go from being like a player that, you know, obviously in Boston everyone loved, to having to be the guy that hires and even tougher, fires people? Was that a tough transition for you?
Yeah, it was a tough transition. I remember when I made one of my first trades, we traded Eric Williams and a big package of, you know, players that we were moving a different direction. And, you know, I was introduced at the Garden and was getting booed. And, you know, I mean, it's not easy, but it's just part of it. You know, you just, that's what the job, and, you know, like you're under a microscope. Everything you do is being analyzed and evaluated, talked about. I have a hard time. Magic is a pretty beloved player, and I don't know how much scrutiny he had as a player, but I'm not sure that is as much. Again, like for me, this would be a really hard job because there's so much time you put into it. And if you're not in it with the people that you're working with, it makes it very, very challenging. And I've seen that for years in the NBA. And we have it fantastic in Boston. We've been, I've been spoiled with great ownership and great coaches to work with. And when we can be on the same page, it makes the challenging times tolerable. And it makes it worth it.
All right, can you clarify one thing for me? Because Magic Johnson, one of the reasons that he said he wanted to stop doing this, because he felt that he couldn't tweet out congratulations to players for earning certain benchmarks. Like, he couldn't tweet congratulations to Dwayne Wade on a great career, and he said that he couldn't tweet congratulations to Russell Westbrook on that amazing game the other day. Is that true? Could you not just tweet congratulations to somebody in your position?
You know, it's always a fine line. I mean, I'm constantly wondering if I could or I couldn't, because, you know, you're not supposed to be tampering with other players and you're not supposed to be talking about other players. And, you know, you guys, we have a tough time on this show. Just sometimes you guys have questions that I can't answer. and I find myself, you know, I've gotten myself in trouble a few times. I wouldn't put it on the level of tampering, but, you know, just saying something about a player that I shouldn't be saying. And Magic is a guy that he wants to be out there. He likes that, and he likes the players. He genuinely roots for them like we all do. And I had the very thought last night, you know, like what a great career, as I was watching Dirk Nowitzki's retirement game and Dwayne Wade's, and it would be nice just to be able to do all that, but I'm sure that they really don't care if they get one from me. They might care if they get a congratulations from Magic Johnson.
I'm surprised you haven't quit due to the restrictions put on you to tweet players. It seems like something that would be so hard to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, that does seem like a very, very small thing in the whole scheme of things.
Well, considering it didn't exist until like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm good. People seem to survive without it.
Yeah, very strange.
Right.
All right. So this, am I asked Mike Gorman the same question, and I kind of want to get your perspective on this. Am I crazy in thinking that the way that the Celtics ended their season, like the past 10 games and how well they played, that I can actually believe in them, that they are going to be able to perform well in the playoffs? Because I think it might have been Chris Forsberg who said that it's almost like Charlie Brown and Lucy keeps taking the football away. The minute you think they've got it together, you know, they go into a slump. But this feels different. Does it feel different to you?
Yeah, I feel like our team is making great strides. But, you know, I felt that way from the beginning. It's interesting how, you know, as I just watched the reactions from our people, I'd say, you know, like, I mean, Chris Forsberg is with us all the time, and he's, you know, he has the ups and downs of in the emotion, because he's a fan also on top of a media person. And so I feel like there's the difference is, for me, I see goodness in even a tough loss. I see good play and progress, and you know, everyone says, oh, they're going to just turn it on. Well, you know, we've played some pretty good basketball for a while lately, and you know, we had a really tough loss in Philly. It was a tough place to win, and we had an 18-point lead we blew in Charlotte. But I mean, to get an 18-point lead, a team fighting for their life, there's a lot of good that happens in that game as well. And so I've seen a lot of progress in our team. I feel like Kyrie's had a terrific year, one of his best statistical years of his career. We see the progress in Gordon and Al Horford this second half of this season. We see Jaylen Brown coming along. Jason Tatum has started to get back after a little bit of a March funk. He's been playing better lately. And so, yeah, I'm very encouraged by where we are.
You mentioned Gordon. Is he all the way back to 2017 in your eyes?
I don't know. I think that Gordon is, you know, playing better than he's played all year. And he's playing really well. Is he back all the way? I'm not sure. I'm not sure yet, because he hasn't played for a month straight at 35 minutes a game and put up those kind of numbers. But he's had some amazing games lately, and I'm very excited about it.
All right,
I'm excited about next year for him as well.
Well, someone who's going to be extremely important in the postseason is Marcus Smart, and he had a little bit of a scary moment when he went down and then said he was fine and then just fell to the ground again with what's we've been told is a hip pointer. What do you know about his return?
Yeah, so I don't know that. I saw Marcus getting treatment yesterday. He was feeling much better. We'll probably know a lot more today when he tries to get on the court and go do some things. But I feel like he's going to be okay, just because it's Marcus. You know, he's just made of steel, and he's just I mean, last year, how many guys, you remember last year he had that surgery on his thumb and splint, and nobody was going to play, and he came back and played early, and first possession he dives on the floor for a loose ball, and you know, so I think we all take him for granted, but I think he's going to be okay, and but he's day-to-day right now.
I don't know a lot about hip pointers. Is that something that you can just play through, or is playing too early before it's healed affect, like, your ability? Like could he make it progressively worse? Is it the type of injury where it's better to wait until it's fully healed, or can you just play through it? I know nothing about hip pointers.
Right. So I've had hip pointers and played through them, and it didn't really get worse. But, I mean, like, there's different levels, and we'll be able to I mean, not every hip pointer is the same, so we'll be able to have a much better feel for Marcus. But we see him as day to day, and hope that he can practice tomorrow and progress.
And Jason Tatum, what is the status on him?
He's fine. Jason will be fine.
Okay, so you're looking at a potential fully healthy roster, the full lineup, potentially ready to go for game one.
Yeah, I mean, it could be the healthiest we've been all year.
Wow, well, that's good to know. Now, do you know what time the game is going to be?
I don't. They won't announce that until after all the regular season games are over tonight.
But I've heard 9 in the morning.
That's the big talk around town. All right, Danny Ainge, thank you so much for the time, and have a great week, and we look forward to talking to you again.
All right, guys. Have a good week. Thanks.
Okay. I just like how he's not planning on contacting Magic Johnson to congratulate him on his retirement.
Okay, you want to hear something that I did not say?
What's that?
when you guys kept saying hip.
Well, you made the joke about the dog that was going to Hot Topic.
No.
No, that, what?
But this is different. And I didn't say it out of respect for all of you. Mm-hmm. Said it's an auctioneer with skinny jeans. A hip pointer.
I've never heard of an auxiliary as a pointer.
He points at people.
Points at people while he's jacking up the price, you see.
Yeah, he points.
And he has skinny jeans, which makes him hip, you see.
I didn't do it.
It would have taken me a little longer to figure that one out. I will admit.
What did I say the first time?
If you like, said
a dog with a dog with a
your horn rim glasses or something.
A dog with a fedora.
That one I got quick. Yeah, this that last one, the auctioneer with skinny jeans, would have taken me.
Well,
a while.
You know, it'd be nice if you could tag a joke every now and again, Wallach. I mean, you put me out on an island.
That's my fault.
Yeah.
Sorry, Fred.
But
it's
I thought I thought for a split second that I was going to say it, and then I didn't. And I didn't say it.
I don't know why not.
I think
I started laughing to myself, and Dan saw me.
We have a really good chemistry with Danny Ainge. He tells us stuff that he doesn't really say to many people.
I made him laugh twice.
However, I don't think we have Gorman chemistry with him yet. I think that that's you can only pull that stuff with Gorman. I think Ainge.
I didn't do it.
I say you should have let him rip. I think you should have said it.
I made him laugh twice. I made him laugh twice in that interview.
It's two different types of laughing. Like, because the things you said were like legitimate funny jokes that, like,
how dare you?
But that's one of those way out there. That's like, how do you handle this one?
I say screw Rich, let it fly.
I did not.
I knew better.
Because you have a good radio sense. And you know where it lands, and you know where it doesn't.
Well, that wasn't going to land anywhere.
that
was going to land in the middle of the ocean.
Because Danny was talking and actually telling us really interesting information.
Right.
There's times when to throw it in. Fred knows what he's doing. There's a reason he didn't do that.
What is this? I mean, we added Danny. Let's just listen. We got nothing else for the rest of the show. Charlie, go ahead.
Yeah, Fred. Hey, I was just calling. I thought you were kind of rude. Slighting Mr. Gorman, I think he asked you to thank Danny for the charter flight.
Oh, we forgot to do that.
Thank Danny for the team plane?
For the charter. He did ask us to say that.
Gorman said he got the charter flight. You know, he was hamming it up with you guys. And he said to say thanks to Danny. And he just kind of disregarded it, passed it off like it was nothing, you know?
But don't they fly on the plane all the time?
I don't know. He just asked you.
All right, Charlie. Well, listen. You stink. Yeah.
All right. See you later.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, I forgot to do that in the midst of all my questions during that interview. I forgot.
Ooh, yeah.
You see, it's a guy with a trimmed beard that's mad at someone.
Or you could say... It's a woman with horn-rimmed glasses that sang the national anthem at last year's home opener.
Oh, the point. Now you went Pointer Sisters. Now
certainly
you went Pointer
nailed
Sisters.
It.
Did I nail it or did
no,
I nail it?
No, that was good.
You went Pointer
it was,
Sisters.
It was way
on
too
me.
Wordy, but I got there.
No, you that was
there.
Good.
I see. You could have tagged my joke. You could have tagged it, but you chose not to. All right, we'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Sports Hub app. No parents, no rules, no shirts, and best of all,
it's Toucher and Rich.
I read you loud and clear.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Rich, what's going on?
So earlier in the show, we had a contest where we were giving away Bruins tickets to person who heard Jake DeBrusque thanking Toucher and Rich for the TNR bump. Well, those tickets have already been given away. However, Joe Haggerty from NBC Sports Boston did an article where he talked to Jake DeBrusk about it. And it's called Jake DeBrusk looking to ride the TNR bump into the Stanley Cup playoffs. He said, it shouldn't be surprising that Bruins left winger Jake DeBrusk requested to be a phone-in guest to the Tutcher and Rich show on Thursday morning, as he's done throughout most of the year. However, he usually does it on Tuesdays. But what makes this extra special, this is me talking, is he specifically asked for game one.
Yeah, he truly believes that this is, well, I don't know if he truly believes, but this is part of his routine now on game days.
He said the two morning radio show hosts have begun calling it the TNR bump with the Bruins left winger, who said that he's 11 for 11 scoring goals when he is the Bruins guest on the 98.5 The Sports Hub morning show. So it's pretty clear DeBrusk wants to see if that good fortune will continue right into the postseason for a Bruins team looking to get every edge it can against the Maple Leafs in the first round. Quote, it was good this year. I think it was 11 for 11 for something like that. It was pretty crazy, to be honest, said DeBrusk, who admitted that he requested to talk to the show on the morning of game one. Quote, I think I'm going on the show Thursday. I don't want to jinx anything or say anything, but it'll be nice to talk to those guys for sure. Hopefully it keeps the mojo going. We seem to win a lot of those games as well, so you don't want to second guess anything. And then in my most proud moment, it says, Touch and Rich co-host Rich certainly have agreed with DeBrusk about the strange coincidence after the interview effect. Quote, it's pretty damn crazy. He texted me about it. I didn't realize it was being quoted. Would have given him like a better quote, like, it's coolaroo and totally boss. Said, certainly the radio phone appearances have played into the career high 27 goals that DeBrusk scored in his second NHL season. By the way, that is nuts. The fact that that's just, what, two goals behind what Sagan had his second year?
Yeah.
And they may play a good luck charm for a player who's going to be a key headed into the first round of the playoff series against the Maple Leafs. DeBrusk scored 5 goals and totaled 7 points in last spring's 7-game first-round series against Toronto and was one of the players who really stepped up to make certain that Boston advanced. So there may be even more radio appearances for DeBrusk on Toucher and Rich in the near future, particularly if he scores once again in the kickoff game of their playoff series on Thursday night. 11 for 11. I'm not going to question that because you know he's keeping total. You know he's keeping a tally on that. If that's the case, even I'm kind of like, whoa, that number stands out.
My question is, how much is he married to this? Suppose he comes on with us tomorrow and then he doesn't score a goal. Does that mean that's it?
Probably.
Or is he willing to give us another shot the following week sure?
That's probably it.
That's probably it.
Okay.
I mean, it's been such a consistent thing. I don't even know if there have there been games, because it seems like they always win. Has there been a game since that slump where he didn't score but the team won?
Probably.
There might have been.
To be honest with you, I wasn't keeping track.
But it doesn't seem like it. It seems like every time that he scores.
Yeah. So, he had 2 goals the last time, right?
He had two goals in that game.
If you listen to the Cassidy interview, Backes is not going to play tomorrow and because of the speed of Toronto, according to Cassidy. And a lot was made on the station about like his comments on Rask, but I didn't take it that way. I took it because he said you go into the locker room after you take out a starting goaltender and there's a kind of an attitude of what the hell's going on. So he said they had 2 capable goaltenders, which I don't know what else he's going to say.
Now, what were they saying? That was a shot on Rask? I think it was just saying that, and you know what? Maybe that slight fear of being pulled, that there's a second guy there waiting for you, and that even in the playoffs, he wouldn't be afraid to pull the trigger.
I didn't take that. And then I listened to it because Felger and Maz played it again, and I didn't get that impression at all.
I took it exactly the same way you did, Fred. Rask is his guy, but if for some reason he had to start Halak, players are used to playing in front of him. He's used to having Halak in there. He knows Halak can play well, but it's Rask's net. It's not even an issue. If Rask goes out and they lose 5-2 in game one, Rask is in net for game two.
Yeah, but then if they lose badly in that one, I think that he might be afraid to put in a lock. But
so it's going to take 2 bad losses.
I would say.
Okay,
would
not agree. 1. All right. Because I agree with you, too. I forgot who he had in here. Ty Anderson, I think, was saying that he would easily pull the trigger if he had a really bad game one. I don't mean to put words in his mouth, but didn't that seem like what Ty was saying?
I don't remember what he said, but I mean, I believe you. I just don't remember what he said, but
it just seemed when Ty was saying that he would that Cassidy wouldn't be as hesitant.
Yeah, sure. But I didn't take it what Cassidy said yesterday is a
not a
indictment.
Diss. It's more confidence.
An indictment on Rask. All right. What's coming up in the stack, Rich?
Oh, so much fun stuff. We will get to a... let's get to something that involves Magic Johnson and all the craziness yesterday.
All right. Here are the headlines.
98.5 The Sport.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Hi, how are you, honey?
Hello!
I'm overwhelmed. You can eat a lot at one sitting.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Rich, what's going on?
You love preseason football, do you? Well, schedule just came out yesterday for the New England Patriots, and one thing is kind of interesting that comes from it, and that is if indeed the Detroit Lions are picked for Hard Knocks, they would be the week one opponent against the Patriots at Detroit. So there you go. You might see a little bit of your own New England Patriots somewhere featured on the show. But then again, we all know that they would be second fiddle to, of course, the Oakland Raiders. Everyone wants the Raiders. It needs to be the Raiders. And if you're HBO and you have the power to choose any of those five teams, why wouldn't you choose the Oakland Raiders? I mean, if it's honestly everything's equal and it's all about ratings, NFL fans want to see it. It's a bigger market. There's the whole thing about them moving to Las Vegas, that whole storyline. You've got Gruden. You've got Antonio Brown, who's just shown that as much as he tries to hide it, he can't stop being an a-hole. You've got the whole Derek Carr situation Mark Davis, the owner. I mean, it is gold. This has potential, and dare I say it, to be as good as the Rex Ryan Jets Hard Knocks. And that is the bar in which all Hard Knocks are compared to. Don't you think that would be the best Hard Knocks, at least since the Jets won? If not as good as the Jets won.
It would be great for different reasons. It would be great because of the comedy. The Jets was that whole Revis situation and everything else.
I mean, when Rex Ryan, the first time you saw him, and he did the let's go get a goddamn snack thing, that was one of the... That and of course, Cromartie not remembering the names of all of his kids.
I forgot about that.
And then Darrell Revis the whole time was holding out, and at the end, and I remember they were eating cheeseburgers on
Woody
the sidelines.
Woody Johnson and his floppy hat and his umbrella.
There were so many great moments.
Like, super rich guys hate the sun. Like John Henry.
They do. They do not want to get the sun on them. But I mean, that...
Well, if they pick the Lions, it's going to suck because the Lions have already put in plans, if they're picked, to basically shun them. Like, they're going to... They've watched all the Hard Knocks or something and figured out every level of which they can be clandestine in the things they do.
But wouldn't you be fascinated to see just how much Matt Patricia tries to be Bill Belichick?
Not as much as I'd want to see everything going on with Oakland.
Yeah, Matt Patricia thing would be dead after an episode.
You know, and Matt Patricia's not going to let... He's not going to show his cards.
Well, he has to be on it. He's the coach.
No, but I'm saying is the whole Matt Patricia trying to be Bill Belichick thing is one storyline, and you can see that inside of an hour, and then that's it.
How about
and
the players don't like Matt Patricia?
I think Stafford's wife is sick, too.
Like, yes, has so, cancer. Yes.
So I would not guess that they... I mean, that's pretty exploitive if they...
If they do that. Well, hey, then that obviously means that more chances that it would be against Oakland.
Because I think that's pretty crappy taste if they, you know, take the quarterback and focus it around the cancer. I would like the feel good
of Mark Davis of Mark crushing Davis. It at Chang's.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would prefer.
I mean, Gruden too. Oh my God! I mean,
Mayock.
There's so many stars.
Mayock.
I mean, Mayock's like you're under the radar superstar that's in waiting for the show. oh my God, you got to make it happen. It has to be Oakland. And I, and you know what? In my opinion, Hard Knocks is back. Like last season with the Cleveland Browns was fascinating. Hugh Jackson was so utterly incompetent. And I thought the whole dynamic would happen with Baker Mayfield, I thought was kind of fascinating as well. But I mean, it was the incompetence of the organization and the way they were organized under Hugh Jackson that made it must-watch television. But the Raiders, that might be end up being the best Hard Knocks of all time.
It could be.
It could be.
It has all the makings of it.
It does. Well, the Astros are not backing down despite a lawsuit from a fan who claims that she was injured by a T-shirt cannon fired by the team's mascot last year. The Houston Chronicle said that a woman is suing the Astros for over $1 million, claiming her finger was shattered after being hit by a T-shirt fired from a cannon by the team mascot Orbit.
What do you need your finger for?
Yeah, not really much. The injury took place during a 2018 July game and left the woman's index finger broken. She claims that she has undergone two surgeries on her finger and that she still suffers pain and a loss of range motion. How? I need to see this video. I mean, to get your finger smashed that way, it's got to be point blank. Because those T-shirt cannons are no joke. Like, if I was to fire it like from here to you, John, which is about maybe like like 5 yards away, if that, I mean, I could see if your finger was out, it could do a little bit of damage. But right. No one's shooting a T-shirt cannon directly in the face of somebody, are they?
No.
No, you're launching them up.
Shoot into the upper deck is what you do.
All right, well, I need to see that video.
I just think that I don't care if they took her finger off. It's not worth $1 million. I don't care if it ripped the finger off her hand.
It's a very important finger, Fred.
Well, maybe she's wearing horn-rimmed glasses and doing a auction.
That'd be a hit pointer.
Ooh, yeah!
You got that straight, Jack.
Fred, could you read this headline just because the universe willed it into existence?
All right. It's Sammy Hagar creates new tequila with Guy Fieri.
Because, of course...
What an odd couple.
I mean, the only thing that would make it more like just, oh, of course, is if the guy from Smash Mouth was an investor as well.
He doesn't have the frosted tips, man.
I just like this, because Sammy Hagar's made like $1 billion with his agent.
More than he ever did from, I think, Van Halen.
Yeah, right. And it was like just an off-the-cuff thing. If you ever watch the movie Supermensch, which I suggest you do, him and his agent, it's just like an afterthought. It's a very small part of the story, but they like put it together in an evening, and they ended up making all this money. And it says, Guy has always been a tequila lover, Hagar said. And when he approached me about creating a tequila together, which, by the way, I already have $100 million of, it was perfect timing. And that I'm still alive. Guy and I shook hands, and a few months later, we were sipping the most amazing Blanco tequila we've ever tasted.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few things I know. Great food, killer drinks, and wild times. I mean,
I just saw that headline. I'm like, well, of course that happened. I mean, I could have written that headline 5 years ago and said this is going to happen at some point because the universe wills it that way.
I mean, if you want to, again, if you want to talk about two guys that would never get together, it would be Sammy.
It is so on like Donkey Kong.
It is.
But if you're Sammy Hagar,
you grab the hammer and save the girl.
You've made your money. Why do you got to start hanging out with Guy Fieri? Maybe they just do. Don't
Chicken
you go to
burgers.
Vegas?
Yeah.
And like go to Hagar's like...
Well, it's the Cabo Wabo Cantina. Yeah, except last time we went there, my friends were all pissed because they were playing Pitbull. It's like, dude, we're at Sammy Hagar's bar. What are you doing playing Rihanna? Like, I want to hear some back. Give me a little Nickelback going here. Well, let's get this party started.
If you read the Sammy Hagar biography, there was only one choice for Van Halen. There was only one singer big enough to take the shoes of David Lee Roth, and that was Sammy Hagar.
I mean, I'm not going to go to the Cabo Wabo and sit there and listen to, like, Ariana Grande. I need a little of the shine down.
Is it like Montrose just, like, going crazy all the time?
Montrose. Wow. The way he talked about his first band, Montrose, in that book, you would have thought they were Led Zeppelin.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, Montrose. Who the F knows a Montrose song?
Eddie Trunk. And that's where it stops.
How old is Sammy Hagar?
Oh, he's, like, 70. He's close to 70. He's got to be, like, 68.
And he's like, looks really good.
He's older than David Lee Roth by a lot.
Yes, he is.
So David Lee Roth is 50 something.
I bet he's like 68.
I bet you David Lee Roth 60 in that. Hagar's 68, yeah.
Yeah, Hagar's over 70.
Oh, yeah.
71.
71?
Jesus.
Yeah. He actually looks really good for 71.
He looks good for like 50.
Yeah, and he still sounds great.
Yeah.
It's all that Mas tequila.
Roth is older than you think. 64.
I heard a podcast with David Lee Roth on it, and it made... He was incoherent.
That's called the David Lee Roth radio show, Fred.
Well, he was talking about the radio show, which I still have found very little audio of. And he was talking about how the ratings were going through the roof.
Yeah. Right.
And then they just didn't want to do it in his style.
Yeah.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. Mm-hmm.
And he did make reference to his uncle.
Oh, well, I mean, the very first day he brought his uncle on for like 2 hours. And I remember, I think, was it you, Dan, who were working at the station at the time, and you just walked into the program director's room?
Wanted to cry or quit. Those were the two options.
Because he's talking about, it's Joe Rogan, and Joe Rogan's, like, ejaculating all over this thing. And he's like, and then David Lee Roth is talking about how they make swords in Japan. And he's like, all right, you know, so they got a guy with charms that you dig, you hear? And then, like...
Was there bongo music in the background,
no,
like he used to play?
No, but he just said, you dig, you hear, like, after every statement that he made, and it was 3 hours. And I was waiting for something to make sense. He goes, you know, man, in New York City, we would, you know, we put a hole in the fence, go kayak, and you dig, you hear,
oh,
me?
God! Oh, God, I'm running! Oh, yeah!
Like, there's something wrong with him. Like, he's gone senile.
I'll tell you all about it.
Well, listen... You'd have a very difficult time doing that.
Oh, yeah!
He spent 10 minutes talking about how they make swords.
Whoa! Whoa!
And it made no sense.
Yes, I'm hot!
Well, if you read the book that I just read, Running with the Devil, you get to hear about the manager of Van Halen during those glory years.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, indeed. All right, don't...
That's really good, Zolak. That's
Zolak's
not bad.
An excellent artist.
By the way, tomorrow we will be giving away a pair of round-trip tickets from Boston to Hawaii, courtesy of Hawaiian Airlines. Remember, listen to the entire show. At the end of the show, we will ask you a question about something specific we talked about. If you indeed get that question correct, you are getting direct flights to Hawaii.
And it's in celebration of the Celtics opening against the Pacers. There you go.
Big prize.
Get it going. And then you can listen to a three-hour David Lee Roth podcast. That makes very, very little sense. It took me like 3 weeks to get through it. You dig? You catch me? I wouldn't do endorsements for things I didn't use, you know. You know, give me an endorsement for cigarettes, you dig?
Whoa!
All right, that'll do it for us. I believe Bill Belichick's press conference will be forthcoming.
You're not David Lee Roth. What are you doing?
That's well. Listen, they could always use a female backup singer. That'll do it for us. Everyone, have a great
day.
Ooh,
yeah.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' on You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.